All right, welcome to the deep dive, everyone. Today, we're diving into some pretty dense territory. Energy law, specifically a case called Illinois Commerce Commission v. FERC. And this one really gets into the nitty-gritty of how we split up the costs for these huge, high-voltage transmission lines that crisscross state lines. I mean, these are the veins and arteries of our power grid.
Yeah,
And someone's got to pay for them.
right, exactly. And the question of who pays and how much they pay is, well, that's not exactly light reading. Luckily, we've got a fantastic set of materials to guide us. Podcast guidance specifically for this kind of case, a thorough case brief laying out all the legal arguments, and then just for good measure, a standard legal brief with all the essential points.
Perfect. So let's jump right in. Our goal, and I think this is important for our listeners, is to get beyond the legalese. We want to understand the core principles driving this ruling, how this decision might change who's footing the bill for these massive energy infrastructure projects, and just as importantly, how this impacts who actually benefits from them. Because, as we all know, electricity doesn't just stop at state borders.
Absolutely. And this case really gives us a glimpse into how we're trying to balance, the needs of different states, different regions, and consumers. It's a fascinating puzzle.
Totally. So to kick things off, let's talk about the two main conflicts at the heart of this case. First, we've got the PJM region, which basically covers the Mid-Atlantic power pool. And they were using something called the postage stamp method for cost allocation. Can you break that down for us? What did that mean in practice?
So imagine you've got a giant grid, right? And you need to upgrade the transmission lines. With the postage stamp method, everyone in that grid essentially pays the same flat fee, no matter where they're located, no matter how much they actually use or benefit from those specific upgrades. So if you're a utility in, say, Illinois, you're paying the same rate as a utility in New Jersey, even if those new lines are primarily benefiting folks further east.
So it's like everyone in a city paying the same for garbage collection, even if some live right next to the landfill and others are miles away.
That's a great analogy. And as you can imagine, it led to some, well, let's just say it led to some disagreements.
Disagreements is putting it mildly. States like Illinois, who are in the western part of PJM, were essentially saying, hold on a minute, why are we subsidizing infrastructure that's mainly benefiting others?
Exactly. They felt like they were being asked to contribute a disproportionate share of the costs, and they weren't seeing a comparable increase in benefits for their own ratepayers. They were essentially saying, hey, we all need a robust grid, but let's make sure the costs are fairly distributed based on who's actually benefiting from these specific upgrades.
Okay, so that's conflict number one, the postage stamp controversy. Now, the second big issue revolved around MISO, the Midwest Independent System Operator, and their multi-value projects, or MVPs. What were these projects, and why did they spark debate?
So these MVPs were all about expanding wind power across the Midwest, building new transmission lines to connect wind farms to the grid. And FERC approved a plan to spread the costs of these projects across everyone in the MISO region, again, based on their overall electricity consumption.
So similar to the PJM situation, but this time focused on wind energy infrastructure.
Right. And again, you had some pushback. Critics, and this included some of the same folks involved in the PJM dispute, were arguing that this method wasn't really fair or equitable. They're saying, look, not everyone is equally benefiting from these wind-focused transmission lines. Some areas might not be utilizing that wind energy directly, or maybe the benefits, like reduced energy costs, aren't being felt uniformly across the entire region.
I see. So in both the PJM and the MISO cases, we're seeing this fundamental tension, this clash between a broad regional approach to cost sharing and the idea that costs should be more closely tied to the tangible benefits that each party is actually receiving.
Exactly. It's a very fundamental question. And to really grapple with it, we need to understand the legal foundation here.
All right.
Which brings us to the Federal Power Act. This act is the bedrock for how rates for transmitting electricity across state lines get determined.
So this is the big kahuna, the Federal Power Act.
You got it. And what it says is that these rates have to be just and reasonable. Sounds pretty straightforward, right? But over the years, the courts have added some meat to those bones.
Meat to the bones. I like it. So what did they add?
Well, they basically said that just and reasonable also implies that the costs should be, to some degree, proportional to the benefits received. This is often referred to as the cost causation principle. It's a key concept in this whole case.
Okay, the just and reasonable standard with this cost causation principle baked in. Got it. Now let's dive back into how FERC's approaches in both PJM and MISO were challenged based on this principle. Let's start with PJM and that postage stamp method. What was it about that approach that the Seventh Circuit just didn't buy?
Well, the big problem, in the court's view, was that FRC didn't really account for the geographic differences in benefits. You see, those new 500 kilovolt transmission lines, they were mostly located in and serving the eastern part of the PJM region. The court was basically saying, look, FRC, you haven't shown us how utilities in the West, like those in Illinois, are actually benefiting enough from these specific upgrades to justify their share of the costs under this flat fee system.
So even if there were some overall benefits to the grid, the court wasn't convinced that those benefits were trickling down in a way that justified those Western utilities footing such a large portion of the bill.
Precisely. And what makes this even more interesting, and I'm sure this detail jumped out at you too, is that this wasn't the first time the Seventh Circuit had dealt with this issue. Remember, back in 2009, they'd actually vacated a previous FERC order on this very same topic.
Yeah.
And they did it for the same reason, not enough evidence.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'd almost forgotten about that. The Seventh Circuit basically sent FERC back to the drawing board once already, saying, go back and show your work. And then FERC came back with essentially the same approach and not a whole lot more evidence to back it up. That really highlights how seriously the court was taking this whole cost causation thing, don't you think?
Absolutely. The fact that they had to send FRC back a second time, it really underscores just how much weight the court was putting on this idea that costs need to be demonstrably linked to benefits. They were saying that regional cost sharing was inherently a bad idea, but they were adamant that FRC needed to provide a solid justification, some empirical evidence to show that the costs being assigned to each party were at least roughly in line with the actual benefits the party could expect to receive.
Right. They weren't demanding perfection or some kind of hyper-precise line-by-line accounting, but they were demanding something more than just vague assertions of system-wide benefits. Okay, so we've thoroughly dissected the PJM situation. Now let's turn our attention to MISO and those multi-value projects. Now this is where things get a little more nuanced, because in this case, the court actually sided with FRC, largely upholding their method of spreading the costs. So what was the key difference here? Why the different treatment?
The big difference boils down to the nature and the scope of the benefits. In the PJM case, the benefits of those specific transmission lines were viewed as being very geographically concentrated, mostly in the east. But in the MISO case, the benefits were considered much broader. Think about it. A more robust transmission system for wind power. That helps integrate more renewable energy into the grid, which can lead to greater reliability across the whole region, lower energy costs potentially for everyone, not just a specific geographic pocket.
So because these wind-related upgrades were seen as having these more diffuse, region-wide benefits, the court was okay with FRC basically saying, look, everyone in MISO is going to chip in because, in the long run, everyone stands to gain from these projects.
That's a great summary. The court accepted Ifarizi's argument that these projects were fundamentally different from the ones in the PJM case. The benefits were less about serving a particular geographic area and more about strengthening the entire system and advancing a shift toward cleaner energy, which would ideally benefit the entire MISO region in the long run.
Gotcha. It's all about the scope of the benefits. But hang on a second. Our case brief mentioned one specific aspect of the MISO ruling that the court did take issue with. Something about export charges to PJM. What was that about?
Ah, good catch. You're right. So while the court was generally on board with MISO spreading the MVP costs across the region, they weren't thrilled with this ban that FRC had put in place on MISO charging for electricity exports to PJM. Basically, even though MISO was building this wind-friendly infrastructure, and even though some of that electricity was flowing over to PJM, FRC was saying, nope, you can't charge them for it.
That seems a little odd. Why would FRC impose such a ban, and why did the court take issue with it?
Well, this ban actually went all the way back to 2003. And back then, it probably made sense. But the court was basically saying, hey, times have changed, the grid has evolved, energy markets are different, PJM is potentially reaping some benefits from this new infrastructure that MISO ratepayers are funding. So maybe it's time to rethink that ban.
I see. So the court wasn't saying that the ban was inherently wrong, just that it might be outdated given the changes in the energy landscape. And they basically said, FERC, you need to go back and take another look at this. See if it still makes sense in today's world.
Exactly. It was a bit of a homework assignment from the court to FERC.
Now let's zoom in even further. You mentioned earlier that the court was looking for evidence of benefits in the PJM case. What kind of evidence were they after, and why was it so crucial to their decision?
That's a great question. They weren't just looking for any old evidence. They wanted something concrete, something quantifiable, something that showed a clear link between the costs being imposed on those Western PJM utilities and the tangible benefits they were getting in return.
Right. FERC had tried to argue that there were these system-wide benefits, things like improved grid reliability, less congestion, you know, benefits that supposedly helped everyone in PJM.
But the court wasn't buying it, or at least not without seeing the receipts. Exactly. They were basically like, show me the data. Where are the numbers? How do you know that a utility in Illinois is actually seeing these benefits in a way that justifies them paying for these expensive upgrades, mostly happening in the East? And FERC, well, they just didn't have enough to convince the court.
There's that famous quote from Judge Posner. He said, crude proportionality is acceptable, but zero evidence isn't.
Ah, a classic Posner zinger. And that really captures the essence of their ruling. They weren't demanding this perfect dollar-for-dollar accounting, but they were insisting on some reasonable, demonstrable connection between who's paying and what they're actually gaining.
It was a bit of a reality check for FERC. Now, shifting back to MISO, we talked about how the court was much more willing to defer to FERC's judgment on those MVP cost-spreading mechanisms. Why the difference in their approach? What made them more comfortable with FERC's reasoning in this case?
Well, the court acknowledged that when you're talking about these big, complex regional infrastructure projects, it's not always easy to do a super precise cost-benefit analysis for every single utility or subregion.
Right. Trying to figure out exactly how much each little piece of the grid benefits from, say, a new wind transmission line would be, well, it'd be a nightmare.
To put it mildly.
Yeah.
So the court was essentially saying, look, we get it. Sometimes you have to take a broader view. And in the MISO case, because those benefits were seen as more widely distributed, more regional in nature, they were more willing to accept FERC's judgment that a cost allocation based on overall consumption was a reasonable approach. It's like, hey, everyone's using the grid. Everyone stands to benefit from these upgrades in the long run. So everyone chips in.
Okay, so context matters. The type of project, the nature of the benefits, those factors all play into how much leeway the court is willing to give FERC. Now, before we wrap up, there's one more crucial aspect of this case that we need to touch on. It involves the 10th Amendment, which is all about the balance of power between the federal government and the states. What were the states arguing in this case, and how did the court ultimately address those concerns?
Several states were arguing that FERC was stepping on their toes, overstepping its authority, especially when it came to the MISO MVPs. They're basically saying, hey, we're the ones who decide where these transmission lines get built. It's our land, our jurisdiction.
They were invoking states' rights, essentially.
Exactly. And you can see their point. These big infrastructure projects, they have real implications for land use, for local communities. But the court ultimately drew a clear line. They said, look, FERC's power is primarily about setting rates. They can't force a state to actually build anything.
So it's like FERC controls the purse strings, but the states retain control over the actual construction.
Precisely. And this distinction, this separation of powers, was really important to the court. They emphasized that FERC's role is primarily about regulating interstate commerce, making sure the electricity is flowing smoothly across state lines and that the rates are just and reasonable. But the states, they still have that core authority over what happens on their own turf.
That's a really important distinction. So for all our listeners out there who are wrestling with energy law, what are the key takeaways from Illinois Commerce Commission v. FERC? What should they be taking away from this deep dive?
Well, first and foremost, this case is a clear reminder that this idea of proportionality, it's not just some abstract concept. It's a real legal requirement. Regulators, like FERC, can't just wave their hands and say, trust us, this is fair. They have to show their work.
Evidence matters.
Evidence matters, absolutely. And this is especially true when you're talking about allocating costs for these big multi-state infrastructure projects. Second, and this is important for anyone working on renewable energy issues, this case shows that the courts are willing to be somewhat flexible when it comes to funding these projects. The fact that they largely upheld FERC's approach to spreading those MVP costs across the MISO region, that's a good sign for anyone who wants to see more clean energy infrastructure get built.
It suggests that the courts recognize that these projects often have broader benefits that justify a somewhat more diffuse approach to cost allocation.
Exactly. And finally, this case really underscores that we're constantly navigating this balance between federal and state authority and energy regulation. And this tension, it's not going away anytime soon. So for anyone working in this field, It's crucial to understand how these lines are being drawn, how this interplay between federal agencies like FRAC and the states is evolving.
Absolutely. And just to add one final point, remember, this case wasn't fully settled. FERC still has to go back and re-examine that ban on PJM export charges. What does this tell us about the state of energy regulation?
I think it highlights how dynamic this field really is. You know, grid conditions change, energy markets shift, technology advances. So the legal and regulatory frameworks have to adapt too. This case isn't a static endpoint. It's a snapshot of an ongoing conversation. And it reminds us that we have to constantly be evaluating, reassessing, making sure the rules are keeping pace with the realities on the ground.
So true. It's a constant balancing act, trying to ensure equity between different regions and utilities, trying to modernize our grid, trying to accelerate the shift towards cleaner energy, and all within this complex web of federal and state powers.
It's a puzzle with a lot of moving pieces.
Well said. And with that, I think we've reached the end of our deep dive into Illinois Commerce Commission v. FERC, a case that really illuminates the intricate challenges of building and maintaining a fair, efficient, and sustainable energy grid in the 21st century. Thanks for joining us, everyone.